The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Kyrie Irving, back and better than ever. Goes off in his return in a wild game that went to double overtime. You need to see this right off the top. Then, Patrick, protocol, progress, the very latest on the chances that Mr. Mahomes will play the championship game on Sunday. And as the legends go head-to-head in the NFC game, you'll hear one thing Tom Brady did that stunned one of his former teammates. All those and more as we get up with you starting right now. We're counting down the days to the NFL's Final Four on Sunday. I am Greeny. We're in New York City and delighted you've chosen to get up with us on this Thursday. A ton of football to talk about today, and we have exactly the right collection of people to talk about it with you. Neek is ready to go. Shefty's got all the insight. D Wood is going to play that piano if it's the last thing we do. And Lewis Riddick is making deals with us this morning as well. But we begin with the game of the night, and it comes from the NBA, the Brooklyn Nets, the new look Nets, on the road against Cleveland. That's Kyrie's former team. He makes the return. He's pointing to the ring finger. He won a championship in Cleveland. Pick it up, fourth quarter. Nets have been trailing much of the night, but James Harden trying to bring them back. Took just 14 shots, finished with a 21-point triple-double. Under 3 minutes to go. Brooklyn is down five. Kevin Durant finding his space. Doesn't need much. Finish with a team high 38. It's a one possession game. Just over a minute left. Joe Harris. No. Kyrie. Yes. Brooklyn ties it at 113 in the final minute. 11 seconds left. Colin Sexton turns it over. Kyrie's got a chance to win it. Look at the time. 4 seconds. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. Oh, it's poked away. They actually call a charge on Kyrie. That would be challenged. It would be reversed. There wasn't enough time left to do anything about it anyway. So we're going to overtime. First possession in the OT for Brooklyn. It's Kyrie off the screen. Straight away three. 37 points in 48 minutes for Kyrie in his return. On the other side, Cleveland still down three. Larry Nance Jr. Yes, we're tied at 120. Next, Nets possession. Harden driving, kicking. That's Jeff Green who knocks it down. Nets a three-point lead. What a game. 5 seconds to go. Nets by three. Sexton on Kyrie. 4 seconds. 3 seconds. Oh, he knocks it in. 1.6 seconds remaining. That one goes. So the Nets have one final chance to win it in the first overtime. Kevin Durant, he played 50 minutes, and that one's not there. We go to a second OT, and that would belong to the Cavs. A little over 2 minutes to go. Cavs up by five. It's Sexton. Yes, Sexton with a game-high 42. Cavaliers in double overtime. 147-135. Kyrie, let's talk.
We'll have good nights, we'll have great nights, but it's how we galvanize this group together and how we sacrifice and compromise for the greater good.
Great glimpses. We started off the game very, very, very good. Just the entire game, we just got to find a way to get stops when we need to.
It felt perfect. It felt like we belong together. This journey together is going to be fun. You know, it was a tough first start, and especially it was an up and down game for us, but you know, I like where we are.
The big fella is up early with us here this morning. It's Kendrick Perkins. And Big Perk, this was a game we were so looking forward to, and it obviously, in a lot of ways, lived up to the hype with double overtime and all the big numbers. What was your number one takeaway from last night?
Well, Greeny, the number one takeaway was that Kyrie missed time, and he came back and took almost 30 shots. Look, the word sacrifice should never come out of his mouth, Greeny. You remember the last time I was on the show and I said that KD was going to be Batman, James Harden was going to be Robin, and Kyrie was going to be Alfred the Butler? You might as well throw that out the window, because Kyrie Irving is not taking a backseat to no one, and he showed us that last night.
So I just wrote this down for you here. KD took 25 shots in the game last night. Kyrie took 28. James Harden took only 14. How does that formula sound to you going forward?
Well, it don't sound good. And here's the thing. Steve Nash has to do a better job of staggering their minutes. He has to play Kyrie Irving in a six-man role. That doesn't mean he doesn't start him, but when you look at what the bench gave them yesterday, it was only 10 points. Bring Kyrie back in with that second unit and let him rock out because he's not passing the ball. On top of that, you're going to need a guy like Joe Harris to come up big for you in the playoffs. And last night, his shots wasn't there. They wasn't finding him to get good looks, and they're going to need him. So Steve Nash is going to have to address this team like a mannequin and let them know that sacrifice, team ball, all three of these guys need to be taking under 20 shot attempts a game in order for this to be a success, in my opinion.
And we will all pay all the attention in the world, and understandably, to that side of the floor. But at the end of the day, the Cavaliers came into this game as the worst offense in the NBA. And the Nets allowed them 147 points, granted, in two overtimes. Can they stop anybody? Is their defense as much of a concern as I think it is?
Hell yeah, it is, Green. Look, right now the Nets can't stop you, Dan Orlovsky, Big Damian Woody, Big Marcus Spears, and Ryan Clark at LA Fitness. They cannot guard anybody. And look, I said this when they traded Jared Allen, that they were going to miss him, and they did. When you watched them last night, they moved Kevin Durant to the five, and that wasn't a good look. The Cleveland Cavaliers shot 50% from the field, 50% from three, and that's just not go get it. So, I don't know if they need to, go over schemes or defensive schemes or whatever they need to do, but they got to figure it out right now on the defensive side.
Okay, and so all of that is great, and we will have plenty more time to break down the hoops. But there was one other thing I wanted to bring up with you, Kendrick, and in order to do this, I want to bring our friends Damian Woody and Dominique Foxworth in early this morning. We have had a great deal of fun so far this week, Kendrick, watching the video you posted of your son playing basketball over the weekend. The swag is remarkable. Big Perk, take us through this a little bit here. Look at that.
Well, Greeny, look, I'm raising little beasts over here. So, look, and he was 7 years old at the time. He's nine now. But, look, we don't have friends when we step on the court. I don't care what age you is. You got to dominate. And you see the walk, Greeny. That's called swag. That's called bringing that intensity.
Can I just confirm once again that the video we're watching here is your son was 7 years old?
Yeah, he was seven at the time, Greeny.
He was seven at the time. The expression, man. Neek, he was big when he was little. I mean, I've never seen a better demonstration of that in my entire life.
I mean, I think because he's Perk's son, you want to call him Little Perk because Perk is Big Perk, but I feel like it's just two Big Perks. And I've seen the nine-year-old videos. He's put them up. Man got a block and then went down on the other end of the floor and shot a three. He didn't seem to need any help. That man is a beast, and I hope you got him playing some D-tackle, too. At that size and that intensity, nobody's running the ball against that dude.
Yeah, D. Wood, I was thinking that guy looks more like an NFL. He looks like an NFL player waiting to happen than an NBA player.
Hey, listen. Big Perk and I, we some big dudes, man. But I'm going to have to tell Perk, I'm going to come down to Texas and check out that birth certificate. Because, man, that boy is too swole, Perk. Ain't no way that boy 9 years old. What you feed it? You got them grits going on down there with that boy.
Hey, D. Woody, Greeny, you right, he do play football. He played nose guard, to be exact. But, hey, look, you know how we doing it down here, Greeny. We raising none but beasts, Woody and Foxy, none but beasts. If he want to play football, that's okay with me, too.
I love it. You know what? If the Nets right now need someone to play some defense, it looks like you might have the answer for their problem. Okay, we will have much more hoops as we go. Big Bird, thank you for that, and thank you for the video and being a good sport about the whole thing. Let us get now to the NFL's Final Four. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes practiced in a limited capacity yesterday, taking another step toward possibly clearing the concussion protocol in time for Sunday's AFC Championship game against Buffalo. Here's Andy Reid on what he saw.
So he looked good. He's just he's in the protocol, so there's only certain things he can do, and it's a limited basis, but today is a little bit limited practice. So this fit right into what he could do. But he took all the snaps, and he feels good. So, I mean, we're just going to follow this protocol as close as we possibly can.
All right, this, you can't overstate the significance of this, obviously, and Adam Schefter gets up with us early this morning. Schefter, what are we hearing out of KC?
Green, I think it would be a surprise if Patrick Mahomes didn't play on Sunday, but a couple of things to keep in mind. Number one, he still has not cleared through the five steps of the protocol. He's at least through stage three, and the Chiefs are hopeful and optimistic that he will get through stages four and five and be able to play on Sunday. And I think people around there would be surprised if he didn't play. Fine. We also have the issue of his foot injury, not a toe injury, as they announced on Sunday, a foot injury. We don't know the extent of that, what exactly it is, but we do know that Patrick Mahomes also is dealing with a foot injury. So the bottom line is, if he does get out of protocol, which we think he will not be 100% for Sunday's AFC Championship game, though who is 100% at this time of the year? It's just the way that it kind of works sometimes. But again, they'll continue to monitor him, hope he gets through the protocols today, gets clear for the AFC Championship game, but clearly he is not going to be 100% while he's out there.
And just to be very clear, because I think a lot of people have been referring to this as a toe or even going so far as to say turf toe, but you want to make sure everyone knows it's not a toe, it's a foot.
I'm not saying it's not turf toe. Look, they've been vague. They're not going to identify what it is. I was told specifically by people who would know that it's a foot injury. Whatever that means, I don't know, but it's a foot injury.
Okay, and we saw, obviously, one way or another, he was limping, and that all was, you know, almost immediately forgotten when we saw what wound up happening when he was wobbling off the field. Schefter, excellent. So let me bring my crew back in here and continue this conversation. And, Lewis, you weren't with us yesterday, but I posed it as simply as this. In your opinion, is it oversimplifying it to say, if Mahomes plays, Kansas City has an excellent chance to win? And if Mahomes doesn't play, they have almost no chance. Is that oversimplifying it?
Yeah, it is a little bit, only because we know it's a team sport, and you just don't know on any given Sunday how a team's going to play, whether or not they have, you know, they're at full capacity or not. But yeah, obviously, if he plays, it changes everything for them. I mean, he's the best player in the NFL. So, of course, they need him out on the football field. And similar to Adam, you know, I know a few people down there myself. I think they would be shocked. I mean, absolutely shocked, like floored, if the young man wasn't on the field on Sunday. And look, he is progressing very well. They're going to practice today in a much more strenuous capacity than they did yesterday. They'll have on equipment. They'll have a helmet on. They expect him to be out there and take his normal amount of reps just like he did yesterday. And, you know, look, from what I know, it is the toe slash foot, whatever you want to call it, that is of the bigger concern, although, you know, they feel as though they'll be able to manage that as well. So I think everything is tracking just fine for him this week, and it's going to be a heck of a game. They need everything at their disposal against a Buffalo team that right now is very, very motivated as well.
No question. All right, so Dominique, let's go to that. Let's live in a world where Mahomes is going to play, but the limitations are based on the toe or the foot. If you're a defender, I mean, Mahomes has got to be the scariest quarterback to play in the league. If you take away some of the mobility, some of his ability to run for first downs, which we saw him do very effectively in the playoffs last year, how does that change how scary he is?
Yeah, I mean, it changes it a lot. If you look back at those big plays in the playoff run last year, so many of them was him running the ball and also him buying time, rolling to his right and finding people down the field or in the end zone. It's a big part of his game. It's a big part of most young modern quarterbacks. But if you watch last week's game, we all saw him limping a little bit, but it didn't really seem to impact his ability to play. Like, the Chiefs ran the speed option on two separate occasions. Like, they had design runs for him. I don't think they were too worried about his foot then, and then he left the game not because of his foot. So he's had more time for his foot to recover. So I don't suspect that he's going to be that limited this game, because he didn't seem that limited in the last game. He's had some more time to rest.
All right, fair. So we will keep that in mind. Then D Wood, since this is a Thursday, we wanted to do a throwback Thursday and remind everyone that every now and again, a backup quarterback playing in a championship game works out very well for a team. Let's take the Wayback Machine to the 2001 AFC Championship game. Now, Drew Bledsoe was not your normal backup quarterback, but this was the game where Tom Brady, in his first season as the starter, got hurt in the championship game against Pittsburgh. You see him going down there. And Bledsoe, who, of course, had begun the season as the starter, came in, won the AFC Championship game, and you guys went on to the Super Bowl. The rest was history. Again, D. Wood, you were on that team. He led it to the Super Bowl, and then Brady wound up winning the championship. So you are no stranger to having to make a quarterback adjustment in the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, you know, that's what when you have $100 million guys, your backup quarterback, you're in a pretty good spot. And Drew Bledsoe, listen, when he came into the huddle, we had no doubt that we were going to go ahead and still win that football game. And we, on that drive, we drove down and he ultimately threw the touchdown pass to David Patton. But listen, when you're at that stage, man, it's all or not. And, like I said, Drew Bledsoe had a lot of experience, a lot of wins in the National Football League. So there was no drop off when Drew Bledsoe came into the football game.
Yes, and again, we acknowledge, with no disrespect intended whatsoever, Chad Henne is not what Drew Bledsoe was at that stage of his career. We will see. Again, the expectation at this point is that Mahomes is going to play. That's the AFC picture. How about in the NFC, where Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady will meet in the playoffs for the first time, but there have been a bunch of close calls. In the 2014 playoffs, Green Bay lost that crazy game to Seattle with the onside kick recovery and everything else. Remember that? Well, that was the one where the Patriots wound up beating Seattle in the Super Bowl on the interception. 2 years later, the Packers lost to Atlanta in the NFC Championship, and that led to Brady beating the Falcons in the Super Bowl. So they've had some close calls. And that brings us to this Sunday, where they will finally meet in the postseason for the first time. They have the most combined passing yards and touchdowns in a conference championship matchup ever. Here's Tampa's coach Bruce Arians with his thoughts.
Yeah, we don't play that game this week. That's the message to everybody. We play the Packers in the NFC Championship game. You start thinking about the Super Bowl, get your ass beat and be packing your bags on Monday.
So, the guy who will say anything... Dominique, how do we even, I don't even know exactly what to ask you. Here's a guy who will literally say anything, but now he wants to make sure no one is looking past the opponent.
Yeah, I mean, that's traditional coach speak in an untraditional fashion. Like, that's the same thing that all coaches say, 1 week at a time, we play these games. But I think it's important to understand that Brady and Rodgers aren't playing against each other, obviously. It's going to be Todd Bowles' defense against Aaron Rodgers at the quarterback position. And that's the matchup that I want to see. They blitzed him well last year and played earlier in the season and played this blitz cover too, where the corner outside is reading the slot defender. Once the slot defender eliminates himself, that corner can sit. And if you notice on that blitz, Aaron Rodgers actually wasn't under pressure. They picked it up. And so they come back and try to answer that situation by using the double slant, which should be able to beat a blitz kind of two look. Except Todd Bowles is ahead of the game at this point. He switches to a fire zone coverage. They make a great play. It's an interception on back-to-back drives. And that's what changed the tenor of that Week 6 game. Aaron Rodgers, I think, is going to be better prepared for those situations, him and Matt LaFleur. I don't expect them to get outclassed by Todd Bowles again this week.
Well, it's a remarkable thing. What you just saw on interceptions that came on consecutive drives were two of the five interceptions that Aaron Rodgers has thrown in 18 games this year. So it is remarkable. He was fooled to some degree, Dominique. You made that point. Louis Riddick, so take us through that. If Todd Bowles sort of won that chess match last time, how does that, what should that lead us to believe will happen this Sunday?
Yeah, I think what it leads us to believe is this. Turnover differential is always what decides big games. It decides every game in the NFL, but in particular, it's going to decide big games. And Aaron was uncharacteristically off that day. And look, right from the get-go, when Jamel Dean had that pick six, Aaron just was not as confident in that football game. He just didn't look as confident in the pocket. He fades away on just about every throw that he throws. But in particular, when those five and six-man pressures started getting after him, he started fading away even more, and his accuracy really suffered. He missed some throws, and you just didn't see him miss the rest of the year. And I would assume he plays much better. And it's the same way on the other side of the football. When Tom Brady doesn't turn the ball over, Tampa Bay is very, very hard to beat. When Tom Brady has the run game at his disposal and they are a balanced football team, Tampa Bay is very, very hard to beat. You saw it in the three New Orleans Saints games this year that they played, okay? The last time, the second time that they had played against one another down there in Tampa, what did Tom do? He turned the football over. They were never in the football game. They got all out of whack as far as run-pass ratio. In the game now, in the playoffs, what happens? He doesn't turn the football over. Drew Brees turns the football over. And all of a sudden, he has short fields to work with, and they just basically roll the Saints. That's really what it's going to come down to. Which one of these quarterbacks is going to eliminate the turnovers? Which team is able to stay more balanced? And there you have your winner. You just tell me which team it's going to be, and I'll pick the winner for you.
And I want to just illuminate the stat that Hembo put up there while you were talking. Brady in his career, 18-0 in the postseason when his team wins the turnover battle. It's remarkable. So, D. Wood, I know an offensive lineman loves to hear that. It's going to come down to which team can run the ball, right? They both want to run it. It's going to come down to which team can stay balanced and run the football.
Absolutely, and I want to piggyback off what Lewis just said. He talked about balance. In that first matchup, Tampa Bay rushed the ball for 158 yards, Greeny. 158 yards. So Tom Brady had a nice running game going behind him, and they ran away with that game. But we also know that this Green Bay rushing attack is not what it was when they faced off the first time. This is a Green Bay rushing attack that over the last six games is averaging like 160 yards per game. Last week against the Los Angeles Rams, they had 36 rushing attempts and 36 pass attempts. That's going to be the key to the game, balance. Can Green Bay have some balance on offense?
I love it. We're all going to talk about Rodgers and Brady, and it's going to be everyone else on the field who winds up deciding the NFC Championship game. All right, we're just getting started here as we get up with you this morning. Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. One NFL player has a suggested destination. I'm living in it for as long as I can. You'll hear it coming up. Plus, there are lots of numbers that tell the story of Lamar Jackson, none more so than 1-3. What can the Ravens do to help them? We've got the answer as we get up with you on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Back on Get Up and take a look at this. Rookie Cole Anthony, Greg Anthony's son, take a look as he is going to put up for Orlando a game-winning three. Dominique, take a look. Here we go. 3-2-1. Ball game.
That's beautiful. Stunting like his daddy, as you mentioned. That's a great shot. A great play for a young player who's coming into his own out there in Orlando.
Like someone Cole. Look up how many threes his daddy made in the NBA. I want to know. I want to know. GA, how many you knocked down? Speculation on Deshaun Watson's future is running rampant, but there's one suggestion from an NFL player that stopped me in my tracks. You'll hear what that is coming up.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Don't miss Thursday's edition of my new show on ESPN Plus, Stephen A's World. We'll have exclusive interviews with UFC icon Conor McGregor before his main event this weekend and acting and comedic superstar Chris Rock. That's Stephen A's World, exclusively on ESPN Plus.
And we're back on Get Up, and it has been a wild ride for Lamar Jackson, beginning last season when he just dominated the sport. Youngest quarterback to win MVP in league history, Ravens were 14-2. This year, starting slowly, ranking in the middle of the pack in total QBR through the first half of the season, then won his last five starts, and then came the playoffs. Lamar beating the Titans for his first postseason victory, then falling last weekend to the Bills. So that has been the last couple of years. Here is Ravens coach John Harbaugh on the future.
Absolutely, we want, you know, Lamar to sign a long-term deal and be with us, and that's I'm totally certain that that's going to happen. Because Lamar Jackson's won a lot of football games here, and our offense has won us a lot of football games here, and we're not apologizing for that for one second. We are going to improve it, no question about it. We're going to go to work to be more precise, more efficient.
But to be clear, he's now through three seasons, which means he is eligible for a contract extension for the first time. And so, Adam Schefter, we come to you. What is the latest on them getting a deal done long-term for Lamar in Baltimore?
Well, Greeny, this is something the Baltimore Ravens have planned for, prepared for, budgeted for, and they know the direction that they're going to go. You heard John Harbaugh himself say, "I am certain that we're going to extend Lamar Jackson." So the only question then is, how long is the deal and how much is the money? And the two sides will figure out a way to get that done because they're committed to him and he's committed to them. And it makes sense for both sides to get this deal done. Yes, the Ravens will have to get Lamar Jackson some help and he'll want to get the contract he wants. But again, John Harbaugh's tone was so insistent and so strong that you know it's only a matter of time before they do this deal this offseason.
And so you saw Hembo put some of the numbers of the richest quarterback contracts in the sport today on your screen. So Louis Riddick is one who will someday be making these decisions for a living. Let's put Patrick Mahomes in his own category. That contract may genuinely be one of one. Is there any reason Lamar Jackson doesn't just slot right in there with Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson, the next highest contracts of any quarterback in the sport?
Well, right now, as we sit here, Greeny, you know, There would be some reason for pause in terms of putting him that high, like tucking him right in there with those guys. And this isn't because I think you should not be committed to Lamar, but because, look, there's some risk going forward relative to how they use him in their offense. I mean, look, this is a guy who they put in harm's way a lot because he is a primary ball carrier. So that's number one. When you're talking about doing contracts like this, you're projecting future performance, and future performance is really contingent upon you being available. And look, Lamar has done a great job of staying healthy thus far in his career, but you know there's that risk factor going forward. That's number one. And number two, look, they just have to make sure that this offense continues to grow and expand around him, and then he grows and expands his game also, meaning this. He has been deadly inside the numbers. You know that they are a tight end-centric attack that likes to throw the football down the middle of the field. But outside the numbers, it continues to be a limiting aspect or limited aspect of their game because they just don't have anybody out there. So are they going to address it in free agency? Are they going to get somebody like Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay? Are they going to get someone like Allen Robinson? Are they going to get someone of that nature? You know, Corey Davis from Tennessee. Are they going to get somebody like that? Are they going to address it in the draft? Because if they don't, no matter how exciting Lamar is, and no matter how much of a unique talent he is, his game is going to be limited, and he's going to consistently, I believe, in the offseason, be talking about disappointment relative to the rest of the teams in the AFC because they just don't have the firepower to get over the top. I think as long as they take care of those things, look, they're going to be right there. They're going to always be contending for the AFC conference title.
What do you think, Dominique? I know you're very high in them going out and getting him the help he needs.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think it's just that receiver. It's not as much fun to talk about. But after losing Marshall Yonda, their probably Hall of Fame guard, they haven't really replaced that type of production. And you're not going to find someone that good. But I think they need to address the interior of that offensive line because all the pulling and stuff they do with that running game is important. And they weren't able to do that as effectively as they have in the past. So the outside receivers are important because Lamar needs that to help his game develop. But they need that running game to return. If they can get that running game to return to the level where he was MVP, it's going to require some upgrades to the interior of that offensive line also, and hoping that the rest of that team stays healthy. But I don't think that, as Harbaugh said, I don't think there's any question that they're going to extend Lamar Jackson and continue to build around him going forward.
Agreed. And excuse me. And look, the NFL, like all businesses, is a copycat business, right? So you see what DeAndre Hopkins did for Kyler Murray, and you see what Stephon Diggs did for Josh Allen. Every team with a really good young quarterback is going to be out there looking for their Stephon Diggs, who can turn their quarterback into that level of superstar. So we'll see. Shefty will be busy reporting all those signings when they begin. Meanwhile, let's get to the big story off the field, and that continues to be Deshaun Watson in Houston, where many people, multiple people in and around the Texans organization believe that Watson has taken his last snap with the team. By now, we've been through this over and over again. You're aware of how he's upset with the franchise for any number of different reasons. Well, I want you to hear, or at least I will read you, what Richard Sherman said on the Chris Collinsworth podcast. He said, if I was Deshaun, I would get out of there as quickly as possible. I'd head to New York. He's talking about the Jets, because Richard Sherman played for Robert Saleh on the defense in San Francisco and loves him, and that's why he's suggesting that. Now, I don't want anyone to say a word for a moment. Let's just live in that for a second, because that, Richard Sherman just saying that, is the closest the Jets have come to winning the Super Bowl in 50 years. Just those words are the closest they could possibly come. And so, Shefty, again, don't toy with my emotions. Tell me the latest on Deshaun Watson and the possibilities here.
Well, it's going to continue to be the same. I think the Houston Texans think and are hopeful that they can convince Deshaun Watson that he should come back to Houston. And when you talk to people around the league, Deshaun Watson wants out and is going to try to move on. And I think in this particular case, if Deshaun Watson is willing to dig in, he's going to get what he wants. Because if he doesn't show up there and he makes his feeling known and he demands a trade or he withholds his services or does any one of a number of things for the Houston Texans, he will let it be known that he intends to move on. And that's going to be a difficult situation. And you could almost see this happening where Houston doesn't want to move on from a transcendent talent like Deshaun Watson. But as we get closer and closer to the draft, can the Texans risk moving past a draft in which they can get the second pick, the third pick, the fourth pick, whatever it may be, to land their quarterback of the future, replace Deshaun Watson, if that's the direction they decide to go? Or do they let it go past there, move on, and call Deshaun Watson's bluff, which I don't think he's bluffing. So it becomes a tricky situation. And let's also keep in mind that the Texans just hired a new general manager, Nick Caserio, who didn't know that this situation was going to be unfolding with Deshaun Watson. They don't even have a head coach yet, so they're going to be hiring a head coach who has to step in and try to help resolve this. There's a lot of unfinished business here, but make no mistake about it, Deshaun Watson wants out.
Louis Riddick, what do you think?
Look, Greeny, this is what happens when you get sloppy and careless regarding relationships and trust at any level of business, whether it be in the NFL or anything. When you tell somebody something, in this case, a franchise caliber player something, you know that he is someone who, you know, a lot of your success rides on. And you have open communication with him, which you're assuming that they had open communication with him on, and then you just totally ignore it. And so the young man is sitting there going, wait a minute, I'm the face of the franchise here. I'm someone who you obviously have invested in, and I have given you everything as far as that return on investment I can possibly give you. And then you just basically ignore me when you know that the relationship that you have with me, the relationship I have with the head coach, the relationship I have with the weapons that are really what are going to drive the bus down here. And you just break that relationship. You just sever that relationship, whether it was intentionally or not intentionally. This is what you inherit. You inherit a young player in his prime now who has it in his contract that he's going to go where he wants to go, or rather, you're not going to send him where you want to send him. He's going to have the right to say, hey, look, this is where I want to go. And now then you don't have a head coach. You have a new general manager. You have one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player in franchise history, in J.J. Watt, whose situation is also looming. I mean, it's amazing. And you know what? You have no one to blame but yourself as far as the people who are the chief decision makers down there. You have no one to blame but yourself. That's just mind-boggling. Because this is really just about relationship management. That's all it is. And it's about communication. That's all it is. And you blew it. And now you've ticked them off. And now you're going to have to pay the price, more than likely.
And as Shefty said, I think the general consensus around the league is that he is not bluffing. Meanwhile, D. Wood, if I could just come back briefly to the Richard Sherman quote, because you still bleed a little bit of that green with the Jets. I mean, it's a fascinating one, and it's obviously one, if you know any Jet fans, they're losing their minds over this possibility. What is your perspective on this, D. Wood?
Well, it just shows you how high, you know, how highly Richard Sherman thinks of Robert Saleh. I mean, for him to say, Deshaun Watson, go to a franchise in the New York Jets that haven't been to the playoffs in a decade, who's basically been almost a laughingstock around the National Football League. That just shows you what type of coach that the New York Jets are getting in Robert Saleh. So, if I'm a Jets fan, I'm thrilled. And we know that the Jets, they have more than enough assets to make this happen. Will it happen? We don't know. We have to see how it plays out. But the Jets are set up pretty doggone well if they want to pounce on this situation.
Obviously, Deshaun has to want it, and the Texans have to be good with it. But, Shefty, I'm just going to tell you right now, it's too late for me not to get my hopes up. People say, don't get your hopes up. It's too late. Shefty, I'm past that point.
Greeny, I wouldn't get my hopes up.
I wouldn't get my hopes up. See, I always try and interpret the tea leaves of what it is you're saying. You're telling me not to get my hopes up.
That's what I'm saying. I wouldn't get your hopes up. Listen, there'll be a lot of teams interested.
Isn't that Greeny, awesome?
Greeny. I would not get my hopes up.
Do you see why the NFL is king? Do you see why the NFL is king? Because Greeny wants hope so bad. He wants it so bad. He's begging for it right now. And Adam, you just won't give it to him.
I'm trying to keep it in check. I'm trying not to let him get disappointed, okay? Look, there's a lot of possibilities, a lot of ways it could go. But Greeny, I couldn't say this any more clear. I wouldn't get my hopes up. That's all.
Shefty, you didn't have to do him like that.
And someone else is going to have to host the rest of the show. I mean, there's just someone else is going to. Yes, call Ryan, get him in here. I'm not sure I can go on. I'll try. As we continue, all eyes on Mahomes in advance of the AFC Championship. But there's a lot of other things to consider. We're considering them next.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Dennis Seaver didn't seem to be drinking the Conor McGregor Kool-Aid. Wow!
Nice clean left hand by Conor. There's another straight left, dropped his mouthpiece. It's almost like Dennis Seaver has no business being in there with him.
Tag. That's what McGregor
hard left hand. That's it.
It's all over! Conor McGregor stops Dennis Seaver!
The Notorious!
Do not miss the next chapter in the career of the notorious Conor McGregor. UFC 257, Poirier versus McGregor 2, live from Fight Island. It's Saturday night, 10 o'clock Eastern on UFC pay-per-view, exclusively on ESPN+. All right, back to the NFL. The Bills in the AFC Championship game for the first time since the 93 season, thanks in large part to the development of their quarterback, Josh Allen. Here's head coach Sean McDermott talking about the expectations for his third-year QB.
This is the next step for Josh, and this is what you want. This is what you work for. This is what he's worked for. So he'll be ready, and we're extremely confident in Josh.
All right, and so I was just looking at the numbers up here because I forgot to grab them beforehand. But as we talked earlier this morning about the NFC Championship game, guys, we talked about balance, how the teams need to be balanced. Well, last week, Dominique, the Bills didn't make any effort to be balanced whatsoever. They didn't attempt a rush in the first quarter. I think their running backs wound up with a total of 9 carries. I'll grab the number here for you in a second. Can they beat Kansas City if they're going to be one-dimensional that way?
I don't think so. I mean, last week they won, but they only scored 10 points. And I understand there was some weather part of the problem in the Ravens' defense is really tough, but this week they're going to have to figure out a way to run the ball, and I think that's by letting Josh Allen, a.k.a. Debo, be the centerpiece of their running game. That big, strong man is just as big and strong as any running back that they have, and he gives them the numbers advantage. So I expect them to do design runs with him and him to be comfortable just scrambling and making plays. He's a super effective passer, but I think this week they're going to have to pull out all the stops and allow him also to be the great runner that he is.
Yeah, last week I have the number here now. Damian Woody, the Buffalo Bills running backs had 9 carries for 29 yards. Is that a formula that they can win with this weekend, D. Wood?
The formula is, Rob, what got you to this point, Greeny, and that's Josh Allen. You know, the Buffalo Bills has never been a running juggernaut this whole season. But what has been is the right arm of Josh Allen, utilizing both his arm and his legs and using the weapons on the outside. You know, a running game can come in different forms. It's not always about just turning around and handing the ball off to running backs. It can be, screen-type passes, quarterback design runs. There are different ways that you can manufacture, quote-unquote, a running game. But ultimately, this falls on Josh Allen, and Coach McDermott said, right, this is his moment right now. This is his opportunity to get to the Super Bowl.
What do you think, Lewis? What do you see in this young quarterback and this offense against Kansas City?
Look, I think the name of the game is going to be efficiency. It's going to be efficiency on third down and efficiency in the red zone. And we know that in those two areas, this team has been absolutely deadly, in particular in the red zone. It's going to be about coming up with 7 instead of coming up with 3 once they get down into the scoring zone. That's what they have to do. They have to score points. They don't necessarily, I believe, have to worry about, okay, well, now all of a sudden we're going to become this 60-40 run pass bounce. That's just not what we're 50-50. That's just not who they are. That's not who Brian Daboll is. That's not how this offense is constructed. This offense is constructed through being a very much so spread type of attack that can hit you with the short passing game and kill you with catch and run situations with Stephon Diggs or in Cole Beasley, or they can go up over top of you with Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis, and just absolutely gut you that way. And then the ad lib stuff with Josh outside the pocket, throwing the football on the run, and his threat as a runner himself. They're going to have to stay true to who they are, and that's what they will do. They're highly motivated. This young man has put in a lot of work this offseason through a lot of different avenues in order to get himself to this point. And even more importantly for this team, defensively, they're going to have to come up with one more stop than Kansas City's defense comes up with. I'd expect this to be a game that easily is in the 30s in terms of scoring for both teams. And the defense that comes up with the critical stop at the critical moment will win the game.
I get it. And I want to come back to this a little later, though, because I want to push back a bit. One of the things I keep hearing all of you guys tell me is that the time of possession and ball control is going to be critical for any team that's going to knock Kansas City out. That always, to me, means you got to run the football at least a little. So we'll come back. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we continue. But right now, it's time for a unique perspective.
Ready or not, tell them here I come.
Look at me, handsome, fast, quick. Doesn't take much for me to, I'm modest, humble, you know. Doesn't take much for me to be confident.
Every week, Dominique brings us his unique perspective. Nick, what do we have today?
All right, I got a cheat code for all head coaches in the NFL right now. Every year around this time, some successful teams start to lose their coordinators and their staff gets gutted and they have to find someone else. Here's the cheat code. If you want to keep some staff continuity, you just got to hire black coordinators because apparently no one is coming to rip them out. You can keep those guys for as long as you want. And I'm kind of being a bit facetious, obviously, but I do think that part of what's happened this offseason, or part of what happens every offseason that I personally don't enjoy, is that we see so many coaches who get jobs that some of us feel like are not as qualified as they need to be, and I hate being in that position. I want that to stop, and I'm happy for guys like Staley, who only had 1 year coordinating, because I don't believe that experience is the only deciding factor on how talented someone is going to be at the job. I wish we could get to a place where we could be happy for everyone that gets these jobs and not feel forced into a box where we have to look at everyone's resume and determine whether they've put in enough work or they've put in enough time. I think that all the coaches that are getting hired last year and this year deserve to get hired, but I wish that all the coaches, frankly, of all ethnicities that deserve to get hired get the same opportunity as it seems like so many of the successful coaches have. And guys like Stefanski, 1 year coordinating, got the job. Obviously, he was ready for it. The same thing for McVay. Like, those guys are ready for the job. I just hope that we could get the same thing for some of the black coaches who clearly are also ready for these opportunities and general managers.
Yeah, this is something that obviously has become a significant issue right now in the National Football League. And Lewis, I saw you on Dan Patrick's show earlier this week talking about this very powerfully and eloquently. I wanted to give you a moment with your thoughts here.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, I echo some of Dominic's sentiments as far as, you know, ideally, it's frustrating. You would like to get to a point where no matter who gets the jobs, that you're happy for everyone, regardless of their skin color, because the NFL is a hard business, man, and it takes a lot of commitment, a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of resiliency to ascend the ladder and get to a point where you're obviously charge. It takes a lot of effort, and you would love to just like kind of celebrate everyone's effort and their career goals and their career achievements, you know, just organically. But the fact of the matter is this: there is obviously, look, the statistics just bear it out. There's just a problem, and I don't know what that problem is. I really don't. I mean, as far as Eric is concerned, Eric Bieniemy, look, all this stuff that you just keep hearing and people inferring about, he doesn't interview well, he must not interview well, there must not be stuff. Look, I've talked to Eric Bieniemy. I've talked to Andy Reid. I've talked to Brett Veach, the general manager down there. You see what Patrick Mahomes says about him. Look, the hiring process is not just objective. There's not just a certain criteria that owners are looking for in order for them to go ahead and hire you as a head coach. A lot of it is subjective. A lot of it is personal. A lot of it is comfort, all of that. And it's not necessarily about do you interview well or not. And quite honestly, I don't even really know what that means. And I've been through plenty of these types of interviews where it's not just about, you know, your skill level. A lot of it comes to comfort and relatability. And I don't know, maybe there's something I'm missing here, but this young man deserves a chance. I'm hoping he gets it sooner rather than later.
This is a conversation that will continue, and it's something the league office has done a lot to try to address, and it still doesn't seem to be helping. We will take a short break as we continue here. Do not miss a comment from Aaron Rodgers that should be a cause for great concern for the fans in Green Bay. You will hear it next. Get up on ESPN.